I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. This way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great, but the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath and Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the Sand Belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
G'day and welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. Matt Mollica here with the introduction duties today for episode 47, where we recap Scott's triumphant win over the course at New South Wales Golf Club in the A Reserve Championships last weekend. We are very kindly joined by Warwick Bewes, head teaching professional at New South Wales, who served as caddy for Evan Newen, Scott's opponent in this championship and trophy match. And we have a wonderful discussion where we recap the match hole by hole, explore the vagaries and intricacies of match play, and get both Scott's perspective on the match as he was playing the particular strokes, and also Warwick's view as an onlooker and an experienced golfing mind. Warwick joined New South Wales Golf Club in 1994 and is a wealth of knowledge. He's available for teaching lessons for members and visitors to New South Wales Golf Club. There'll be a link in the show notes for anyone who wants to avail themselves of that. We really thank Warwick for his time in joining us today and for giving us his insight. A little bit of business here before we get into the main fare for today's episode. First is an ad read for Angus and Grace Go Golfing. They have their short sleeve mock turtlenecks in stock at the moment, and they look fantastic. Recently modelled by Jimmy Emanuel, Adrian Logue and Ewan Porter during one of the Gala Boy days around the public courses of New South Wales. These tops retail for $120. They are straight cut with a 4cm mock neck, plain solid colour, cotton polyester jersey with a little bit of stretch. They fit fantastically well. And for those of you like me who hark back to an era where Tiger used to rock the mock turtleneck in red on the Sundays, these are a must-have item. They're available in navy and a couple of other cool colours, a dark brown and maybe like a latte possibly. Full details on the website there for Angus and Grace Go Golfing. Alternatively, heading to William Street, Paddington, say hello to Matt, check out everything else he's got on the shelves there, you won't be disappointed.
No, it was. It's funny you say that, Matt, about waiting to hear what happened, because I'd won the semi and the quarter 4 and 3, and so I texted Kerry much earlier to say, good news, I got the W. And so even accounting for, obviously this match went to 18, and so even accounting for the difference in tee time, she was getting really anxious because she's like, there should have been news by now. So she was obviously catastrophizing. So then when I finally, texted and said that I'd won, it was like this great relief for her because it went all the way. It was a tense match. And that's why I was sort of, Maddie and I talked last week about the result, and Matt, you might have said, oh, we could do a recap blow by blow. And I felt a bit self-conscious about doing it because it feels a little bit self-gratifying or whatever. And I thought, I really want to have a record of that, almost like for a scrapbook, you know, and have the recording there while it's still fresh in the memory, talking about the thing, how it felt and different shots and whatever. But then I thought, what would make it superb, Warwick, was to get you on as the caddy on the other side of the equation, and also, you know, an accomplished teacher and coach and professional golfer, someone who's known that golf course since you were a teenager as a player. I think your observations and what you saw, you know, while Evan and I were both, you know, losing oxygen at rapid rates, I think that'd be really actually pretty interesting for the listener. Anytime I listen to that kind of recap thing of someone else's round, there's always a tidbit or two that I pick up that I'm like, oh, I can use that. So I'm sure that you'll probably be the ones with the tidbits, but I think everyone's been in a tense match and they can probably think about, you know, those feelings and the thoughts and whatnot. So I think your input from your perspective will be great. Yeah. I was saying to Kate, our GM, I caught up with her midweek and we're chatting, and I was saying I've spent most of the week just going over some of the really terrible shots I hit and beating myself up. And then I have to remind myself, like, oh, no, it's okay. Like, you won the match, so maybe just calm down. Be kind to yourself.
Well, it's interesting. Even the greatest golfers on earth, I'm sure they walk away from a tournament and they've played four rounds, so they're scoring 260, 270 something, and they beat themselves up. Oh, how could you flub that? Or, oh, how could you overplay that shot? Or, geez, you shot that green. And they're unbelievably talented and hitting so many good shots. I'm sure they're still not immune from beating themselves up for their missteps.
Well, during your playing career, Warwick, when you had a four-round tournament and you played really well and you finished the week broadly happy with the outcome, you know, what percentage of shots do you reckon you absolutely executed perfectly, and how many shots a week would you hit even in a good week as a pro that you were sort of a bit upset about or a bit embarrassed about or really intent on working on?
You know, the shots that you would say you would consider to be perfect or executed to exactly how you want, it'd be below 50%, be well below 50%. That's, I think, where the average golfer or even club golfer or even professional golfer, just you cannot perform 100%. If people were hitting the shots, if the pros were hitting shots that they expected, they'd be shooting 20 under per round. Like they're trying to hit the pin, but they're hitting it to 25, 30 feet, missing greens. Like, have a look at the Masters a few weeks ago. They didn't try and hit it in the water on 11. Yeah, Oberg in the water on 11, Morikawa water on 11. Like, they're doing it for a living on the world stage, and they missed their shot by 30, 40 feet.
Yeah. And they're not just elite players, but they're elite players who are at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday. They're having a good week. So yeah, you're right. That shot by Aubert, like, that must have been 60 feet left of where he was aiming.
Yeah, like, you know, you could hear they were talking. I mean, anything left of that pin, everyone says, well, that's a miss or a pull, and it was, you know, it was well in. Both of them were well in. So
yeah,
you know, and yeah, the pros hit it in the trees, the crowds, the water, the bushes, everything. It's not, they're not intentionally trying to make their day a little more challenging. They want it to be as least challenging as possible. So yeah, I think it's their missed shots are better, or they control their missed shots, but that's the main difference. I think the club golfer expects every shot to be next to the hole all the time, no matter what they do.
And I think that's one of the things about match play that's really key is managing those. You're going to miss shots, and it's missing somewhere where you can do something productive with the next shot versus hitting technically a better shot, like a better strike perhaps, but it ending up somewhere that's really not ideal, which we'll get to very late in the round. But, so Warwick caddied for my opponent in the New South Wales Golf Club A Reserve Championship Final, Evan Nguyen. Evan's 14. I want to get that out there early. A few people have texted me jokingly saying, I hope you feel super proud about beating up a 14-year-old. I will say that a 15-year-old made the cut on Corn Ferry last week. So it's not how old you are, it's how good you are. And Evan's going to be a much better golfer than me once he grows into a man's body. I'm just fortunate that I caught him at 14 years of age when we were reasonably equally matched. Evan had qualified first out of eight. I'd qualified third. We both got through our quarters and semis. I think Evan won at the 19th in the quarter and then won 3 and 2 in the semi. And I'd won 4 and 3 in the quarter and the semi. So into the final, one of the things that I've been really fixating on, because I hate the first three holes at New South Wales. They've ended so many of my comp rounds before they're even begun. Like, you're 5 down through 3 and it's all over. I was intent in these matches on starting strongly and trying to get in front. I felt like because they're such hard, kind of tricky holes, I wanted to be ready for them. So I'm usually like roll out of the car while the starter's calling my name to the tee. I was turning up still only 25 to half an hour early, but hitting some balls, having a chip, having a putt. And it was something, Warwick, that, I mean, like, shock horror, I played the first three holes better when I was warmed up. For those of us who can't necessarily turn up an hour ahead of time, I've got wife and kids, or we're coming from work or whatever it is. What's your view on sort of a good warm-up for someone who's tight on time but wants to be prepared on the first tee? You know, how would you spend that, say, 20 minutes to half an hour if that's what you had?
I think everyone's, you know, warm-up can be personalised due to, you know, body, their back, or they may be, you know, with an injury, so they might not be able to sustain a long warm-up. So I think everyone's got to, you know, find your perfect warm-up, but whether it's a stretch in the locker room or 20 balls at the range or the nets, or even just to, you know, get to the when that grip in front of you hits off on the tee, you've got generally 6 to 8 minutes there to have a few swings, and you know, you can catch up with your playing partners, have a chat. But yeah, you want to be ready, especially on that first tee, to execute a good shot. You don't want to be trying to, you know, warm your way up through the first four holes, and then when you get to the fifth tee, be ready to play. So a lot of people will, in their round, whether it be match play or Stableford play, if I'm one or two down through four, that's a pretty good start for me. Well, there's other people out there who are one or two up, and they've got a 4-point advantage or a couple of hole advantage. So yeah, I think everyone's got to find your own little warm up. It could be 20 balls in the nets. It could be, yeah, putts or chips, putting, you know, on the green, try and get the speed of the day. Especially with, you know, we've had some wet weather lately, the greens will be playing a lot slower than they would have been last weekend. So you don't want to be wasting shots out there in the first four holes trying to get your feet for the day.
And that was, it was only, yeah, 20 balls maybe on the range, but I was sort of hitting, what am I going to, you know, what's the wind? So what does that mean? I'm hitting off the first tee. What's that going to leave me into the first green? And then what will I hit on two? That was sort of my, if I could practice those three shots, I'd feel a bit more confident, you know, pretty tense about playing in knockout match play. So you want to feel like, okay, I've just hit this shot 10 times and I know it. So getting into the match. So Evan had, as I say, qualified first in the stroke play qualifying. So he had the honour, and it was a driving iron that was right. Now, Warwick, I want to get some honesty out of you straight off the bat, because he blocked it right, and I heard you say to him, that's fine, mate, and you took his club. And I was thinking, that's in the bushes. 100% that's in the bush, because the fairway's wider, but the bush hasn't moved. Were you feeling in that moment like, oh, that's a chip out?
Well, I knew it was going to be tight. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be requiring a provisional ball. I wasn't sure whether it would be hitting onto the green for his second shot or you know, because sometimes you can, you know, get a little bit lucky down there. So yeah, it wasn't. I knew it wasn't a lost ball or that's it. It was just like, yeah, okay, let's, you know, and you know, he's always looking for situation. You want to give him something positive from the shot. It was pushed off his ideal line, but you know, he struck it reasonably well. So I had to sort of run with that.
Yeah. And what wind there was that morning was out of the west, which obviously the clubhouse blocks those westerlies from the first tee. And often you see people with those winds, they do miss right. They hit what would have been a good shot in a southerly or a nor'easter, but the westerly just catches it. And that's, so I think that's bush. Threw 7-wood back in the bag and took a 5-iron, knocked that down, but then proceeded with my attention and not necessarily huge confidence, thinned a 9-iron over the back, which is not really where I wanted to be, but it did. Evan on in three, hold out, you know, for his 5. I kind of felt like chipping is not something that I generally thrive at, and I am a tense chipper. And so I thought if I could hit a good chip there, then I would feel like I was good to go for the day. Managed to chip one about 5 feet under the hole and make the putt. So I got to 1 up, which I was like, getting ahead early was the goal. So I was happy with that. Two people who know New South Wales will know the right pin basically has nowhere to miss. I feel like, Warwick, I got pretty lucky with a 5-iron that came up on the front fringe, and instead of rolling back 30 feet or more, 20 yards, it hung up there on the fringe, and that was probably – that made the difference in the result of that hole, because Evans did roll back. He had a couple of chips to get it onto the green, and that was 2 up.
Yeah, the way you executed the first hole and the second hole, that second shot was, or the shot into the second green, great shot. But yeah, as you're saying, it could have, you know, a millimeter so back, it rolls down, you know, 20 yards. But I mean, they're the breaks that you'll get or other people will get, and you can and be grateful for that. And I think, yeah, that, like, it was the perfect shot, that pin there. There was got 10 foot of green before and 10 foot of green behind the flag. There's nothing there with, you know, long lines in. It's a tough green in, you know, in the most benign conditions.
Yeah, that's one hole where I feel like, because it's so difficult and dangerous, I've always just wanted to hit something safe, and I've kind of learnt that having a very specific target seems to radically increase your chances of hitting a good shot.
Yeah,
what a funny coincidence that is. The clear thought and the identification of a target prior to a swing would actually lead to a better outcome. I should store that in my own memory bank. Maybe my scores would improve.
All those books you've read have come have served you well there, Scott.
Yes. So two up through two, obviously feeling like this is good, this is going to plan. Third, usually the third is often not a hole that we'll breeze through because so much can happen, but it was two fairway woods into the fairway, two short irons near a back pin, which, you know, for me that was just landed in the front half and hope that it releases because that bat, I'm not good enough to chase that back pin. I think that was an example of where, you know, I managed to get past Evan last Sunday, but where a really good player separates themselves because he had the stones to hit the shot that, you know, his landed pin high and released about 20 feet past the hole. You know, mine landed 35 feet short and I ran it down. Now, look, that was me knowing my weaknesses and playing to my abilities. But I think that was one example, you know, two putts, we halved the hole, but where that's a shot that he hit that I wouldn't dare try to hit. So just those things that I guess I saw as an opponent that was like, okay, this kid's got a really, really strong iron game.
Yeah, his iron play, you know, in the last sort of six, eight weeks has really sort of stepped up a notch. But yeah, there were some shots there that I saw him hit on Sunday. I was really amazed with the quality of the shots there that he's sort of, you know, really developed in the last sort of 6-8 weeks.
I don't want to give anything away early doors, but there's one later on that I just, you know, you don't see many, many players hit. So two up through three, we move on to four. He got really unlucky with, there's a tree that must have, I don't know what Pro V's have on the, well, is it, you know, Serlin or urethane or whatever the cover of a Pro V is, it has a magnet for that because so many shots that you see people hit off that tee and you think, oh, that should be okay. And then it's under there and they're holding a 7-iron halfway down the shaft, just chipping one out. That was his story there. And then I got very lucky. I thought blocked the crap out of an 8-iron and I was sure it was in that bunker, which people don't get out up and down out of that bunker. Certainly not people of my level, but came up short of that bunker and was able to just hit a little putt up the hill. As well as I chipped the one-on-one, there was no chance I was putting any loft on that ball. You know, it's a putt that's kind of like, what do you reckon, 5 feet up a slope. And I just desperately wanted that one on the green and got lucky that it rolled to about 5 feet.
I thought you managed your up and down there. That's the correct choice. A lot of the time down there, tight lies quite often. And then, up that big wall. So, yeah, the putter up the wall of the edge of the green was a good play. He executed it well.
And the thought for me there is, like, he's going to make five. He hit his third onto the green, but he had about 20 feet, 30 feet. So he's going to make five in all likelihood. I just need to not make six. Like, and maybe that's there's a defensiveness there. But I mean, my thought was it has to be on the green. If it rolls back to your feet like he's had on two, that would have felt like I'd really let myself down. So yeah, you got to hit those ones so much harder than you think to get them up those. Must be like a 60 degree slope or whatever. I'm always surprised how hard you got to whack those to get them to go, well, pretty much vertical, I guess. But now we move on. We're three up now through four. And it's funny because I got to two or three up through four in every match and I played five badly in every match. And I don't know if there's something about me getting defensive or tightening up, but I knew on five, like, I'm not long enough to hit it over the ridge if there's no wind. There was basically no wind at that point. I think 5-iron was the right club to hit, but have you seen a worse swing on that tee in the 30-odd years you've been at that club? Because it went about 8 feet off the ground, straight right, into the first bush it could find.
From a coach's perspective, it almost looked like you just hit the shot without, you know, giving it its full importance. Like where the previous four holes you went through, you know, your full routine, that one, your routine did change. It was a lot quicker. I think you just sort of put the ball down and said, oh, I'll just chip a 5-iron down there and play it as three shots. And that's where I noticed the routine totally changed. And like, it, to me, it wasn't a shock that a poor shot was was played, but it probably wasn't as good as you wanted, but the routine totally changed on that. So I think it was just, I'll just chip a 5-iron down there. Don't have to do too much with this. And that's for the club golfer out there, every shot doesn't matter whether it's a driver or a 5-iron to a wide target. Got to go through the same routine each time.
Yeah. And it's probably what I was talking about on two, where I didn't have a specific, because there's so much width down there with the shared fairway with seven. I think when I lay up, I'm guilty of just thinking, I'll just whack something somewhere. So maybe that's, go back to that thought process on two, just be aiming at a leaf on a tree in the distance versus just, oh, I'll just whack something down there.
Yeah.
So, that whole then, though, was probably more competitive than it could have been. So then I did hit driver up on the hill. Evan had laid up. He ended up short in three. I was short with my second shot with my second ball. So my fourth shot were basically near 10 feet from each other or 10 metres from each other. He managed to make his six. So I didn't get up and down from my six. So he won the hole. But it sort of happened to me at two as well, what I think happened to him there, which is, we talked about two, that he made a bit of a mess of the chip. And then I had about 12 feet for birdie and I left it about 3 feet short. And it's that situation where your opponent stuffs up, typically when they lose a ball. It's almost like you start playing to not do something really dumb versus him trying to still make a par on that hole or whatever. And I feel like I see it a lot in match play where people either halve or lose or risk a hole that really they had no right, giving their competitor a chance on. Do you recall, was there a change in how he would have played that hole, or is it just that, there was no wind really? So I feel like a five was a pretty comfy score for a player as good as him.
Yeah, the third, he hit a pretty good layup shot, but it just went into the right rough. And it's a downhill, for the people who aren't familiar, it's downhill. And the lie he had, it had flyer written all over it. So, and that pin, everything just runs away from that pin. So, the decision was, we think it's going to fly. He hit it and it didn't come out, with any of the speed that we, thought it might have. So that's why it came up short. And then where that pin is there, it's a tough up and down or two putt from the front section of the green. So in hindsight, I think, probably would have played it the exact same way. Looking at that lie, I thought it was going to jump and so did he. So, I know what you're saying is, some people do play super defensive around, other people's lost balls or troubles on a hole. But, that hole there had to be respected as well. It's not if he played a bit more aggressive, he hits it over the back and then, you're probably going to be in the box seat from that position. Yeah.
It's funny, I said to him, when I saw him in that Cooch rough, I said, and the pin was back left, which anything from kind of middle left, if it lands with any speed, it just releases. It trickles slow, but it never stops and it goes off the back. I said to my dad who was caddying, I said, he's a good chance to knock this over, I think. I've had that shot and if he gets it all greedy, there's not going to be a lot of spin on it. We could be a chance here. And so I think absolutely what you described doing is what I hoped probably I would do if I had my head screwed on, which is that, if it flies, it's middle of the green. If it's not a flyer, I'm front edge and I'm unharmed.
Yeah, that was the play. And I've had a chat to him since and both agreed that was the shot. And if we were out there again, 7 days later, I would probably do it choose the same, club and execute it the same way.
Yeah. And it's that percentage thing about golf, isn't it? That, it might be 0.2 of a stroke gained or stroke lost, but it's about just taking, particularly in a big match, it's about taking, in that case, missing long left out of play. And if you come up short, you come up short. But I guess, a few blades of grass are different and he hits that to 10 feet and it's perceived differently. I think it's really important what you're saying as a coach and for players to do this, to be like, based on what I knew at the time, and the situation I was in, I did it for X, Y, and Z reason, and that was a good judgment. That was a good decision-making process. Whatever happens with the shot doesn't change whether that was a good or bad decision. Sometimes it's hard. You re-prosecute based on the outcome versus based on what you knew before you hit the shot. So we we're back to two up now. Back to two up, and we go to the sixth hole, obviously famous par three from over on the island. The wind was sort of starting to kick up a little bit here, and so Evan had the honour, hit his driving iron. He seems to like hitting that driving iron. It seemed to come out in a lot of crucial situations. So front edge of the green, we've got a pin back left.
So just for the listeners who've not been to New South Wales or not super familiar with the layout, Scott, you walk across the water, you go over the little bridge out onto Cape Banks, you hit back over the water onto that super photogenic green. What's that measure from the back?
So it's about 184 from the tips, which is where we're playing from.
Meters, which is 200 yards. Okay.
Yeah. Pin was back left. One of the things about that hole is I think it was only about, I think I gunned it at about 165 front edge, but such is the slope back to the ocean that I've missed shots, you know, off a meter off the front left, and they roll and roll and roll through the kind of dormant thin. That rough doesn't even seem to grow thick in summer for whatever reason. Maybe it's the salt spraying onto it, but the ball will roll back into the hazard. And I've had that happen to me a few times. And so I was really mindful. There's the Doak and Schneider green that got built in 2019. It's got this big kind of amphitheater on the back right. And I've always just thought, well, I've never looked for someone's golf ball in the bush behind that. No one's ever managed to hit it that far long. You hit it onto the back slope and it feeds back onto the green. And I figured, well, if I'm going to miss, you know, I'll miss back edge. I'll miss further down the green. So I had a forward. And it was probably the best shot I hit all day, I think. It was a little kind of sawed off forward that didn't end up having to use the slope, kind of landed pin high 20 feet and sat down pretty quickly. But yeah, that was just, for me, that was all about not missing short. He was front edge, so I'd kind of thought, well, he's got a good chance of making three here. And as it was, Evan's putting had been a bit funny. Yeah, you know, understandably, it's a stressful situation. He'd sort of been, I think, missing 3 feet short, and his lags had been a bit weak and a bit tentative. And so all of us who've been missing short for four or five holes know what we do to overcompensate for that. And unfortunately for him, Warwick, that was a hell of an overcompensation with that putt that started on the front edge of the green and ended up about 25 feet over the back edge.
Yeah, he just... I think, you know, and I guess that's one of those situations where he's seen your ball in a very good, you know, position after a good tee shot. And then, you know, a couple of times he said he felt as though he needed to, you know, make birdie or make a really good score on a hole. And I think that was just one of those situations where he probably pressed where he didn't need to press. And yeah, his speed wasn't the best on the final day. And yeah, that's the one that sort of probably was the highlight of, you know, he's probably weakness of the day was the speed putting.
Yeah. Yeah. So he knocks it over the back there, has to chip back on, misses the putt for four. I'd managed to, again, but like I did on two, I rolled that first putt of mine, must've been 4 or 5 feet short from 20, 25 feet. And that was conceded, so I didn't have to putt that one. Back to three. We both knock it up seven pretty decently off the tee. My miss was just, you know, short left to a mid-right pin's not a good miss. Evan hit probably a much better shot than I did. He blocked it a bit, but a better contact. He was chipping from that little collection area over the right bunker and hit like a really – the thing that I often see and that I often do from out of that little – it's quite a short shot, Matty. Like we're looking at probably a 8 meter shot, and you desperately want to get it up onto the green. You see people knock it 15 feet past the hole, you know, and they make five, and it's a difficult hole. So five, you know, you walk onto the next tee, and it's okay. But he hit a really, really delicate little. Yeah, as I said, it was a sub 10 meter shot, but he made it spin pretty hard, and it was probably unlucky not to drop, Warwick.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah, I thought he'd hold it when I was sort of standing, you know, side on. But, yeah, he executed that, you know, the way he sort of talked it through, how he was going to – how he wanted to play it. So, yeah, he was pretty pleased with the execution there.
Yeah. And, look, from short left to that right pin, again, it's just forcing yourself to hit it hard enough to crest that big wave of a green – Left myself 20 feet, missed it low, as you do. We're back to two. And this is where, you know, admittedly, Evan had a slow start. So looking through the round, I'd sort of tallied up our scores based on, you know, what we had or what we would have had with concessions. So through six holes, I was two over, he was seven over, and I was three up. So really, you know, I'd played well through that, but probably not so well that, you know, you are going to be three up a lot of the times. I mean, the week before I birdied one, two, and three to get to three up. That felt like earning a three up lead. Through six, I felt like I'd not been gifted a three up lead, but I there was no feeling that I was really flying. You know, I was really concentrating every shot, kind of grinding on it. So seven was for me, maybe it was that really nice chip. Sometimes it's just one shot, I think, that gets someone going. But Evan seemed to really catch a bit of fire after that whole Warwick.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit a couple of, you hit a good, I think, after the, you know, the poor putt on the previous hole, the six, he sort of thought, okay, yeah, I've got a knuckle down. Yeah, like the shots, the drive, you know, it was hit up seven, up the hill was good. And then, yeah, you just sort of started to string a couple of shots together, which sort of was the kickstart to, you know, getting back in the game a bit more.
Yeah. So, as I say, we're back to two up. And on eight, he misses a wedge short right in the bunker. Now, that's a bunker that can be a hell of a place to be. Balls seem to often gather in the back half on a downslope, and you really can't get up and down from there. And I was 15 feet for birdie, and I'm thinking, all right, here we go, back to three up, maybe get another one on the way into the turn and kind of give myself a buffer. But again, Matty, golfers who are much better than you and I, or who are going to be much better than you and I, hit shots that we don't imagine hitting. And so, of course, Evan splashes out from that bunker to an inch, 2 inches. And it was one of those great match play situations where I'm in that eighth green, so slippery. And even, you know, I didn't have a downhill putt, but I feel like even a crosshill putt like I had, they're downhill on that green because the ball just doesn't want to stop. And you go in an instant from thinking, I've got two putts to win this hole, and I'm going to drive the dagger home. Then all of a sudden you're over your 15 footer just thinking, I hope to Christ I can two putt this and steal a half. It's that great vagary of match play. And I adore that. Even when those situations go against you, it's one of the things I think that I love about match play that stroke play just can't compete with.
Yeah, that's that sudden momentum change. One great shot changes everything. Suddenly looking at that 15-footer through a different set of eyes, as you said, just what once was a birdie opportunity suddenly becomes, please let me just get out of dodge with a two-putt and a half.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, Warwick, can you give us a little bit of background at this stage about Evan's competitive golf history, if he's ever been on a stage like this, how many medals he would have played at New South Wales, for example, and what sort of competitive experience he's had prior to playing in this match with Scott?
This is probably, I think he played maybe one or a few games of junior pennants last year, so his match play experience was little to none, you know, leading into, you know, the championships this year. Yeah, like he plays with some pretty good, you know, accomplished players around the club, but they don't sort of do a lot of match play. It might just be go and have a hit, but yeah, you know, sometimes teenage kids won't say anything to one another for 20 minutes, half hour, because they're all on their phones most of the time. So half, but yeah, I think he's probably only played one or two monthly medals here at the club. He joined last year, his membership came through. So yeah, he would probably have only played New South Wales 20 times, I reckon, to be honest. So yeah, the way he sort of manages himself around the course is pretty good for, as you would say, a rookie. But yeah, his match play, like I mentioned to Scott during the match on Sunday, I said, don't be offended if he doesn't give a putt, because he's still getting his head around the gimme process. And yeah, like it's just a great learning curve for him. So you know, I think the match play process is great for getting to understand a bit more about the golf game as well.
Definitely. And he sounds like he's got a good short game.
He's got a good short game. He probably will say he doesn't. He'd probably say, oh, it's all right. But I mean, he's a small small guy in stature, but you know, he's filling out, he's getting stronger. But yeah, when he, I think there was a couple of shots out there, you know, where there was a few crowds developing on Sunday, a couple of times, you know, or both Scott and Evan hit good shots, and you know, everyone sort of turned around. He's a little guy, but he gives it a bit of a rip, and I think it sort of raised a few eyebrows when a few people saw him, you know, up close hitting a few shots.
I think it's interesting too, like having been at New South Wales for maybe 8 years now, you know, we do bring through really good juniors as a general thing. And you see Lucas Normofsky is another example that comes to mind, that you see these kids come in and you play with them. And I played with Lucas soon after he joined, and he was off about 3 or 4, and he was a little, physically quite a little kid, but you can see, okay, he's a good player. And now Lucas has grown into, you know, a teenager's body, and you know, he's got taller and he's got stronger and he's got broader. And you just see their golf come on in leaps and bounds, because all of a sudden, you know, the strength, they've got this great finesse and skill around the fine touch of golf. Short games are always really tidy. And then they are able to smash it and it all gets unlocked. But for what you said, Warwick, I mean, on drives where Evan and I both got onto it, and look, I'm 6'1" and 100 kilos, and he's probably 5'7" and 55 kilos. When he smoked driver and I smoked driver, the balls were next to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great great thing about the game. Where can a 14-year-old compete with a, you know, an adult and then be head-to-head? And, you know, there's not many sports where you can have sort of a generation age gap and be out there, you know, in the heat of battle, which is brilliant.
Yeah, no, it was tremendous. So, yes, we've just left 8. We are still 2 up. I've lost 7. We've halved 8. 9, he didn't hit a great, I think it was his driving iron again off the tee, had a long way in, but hit a good iron shot again. It was whenever he needed a really nice iron shot, it came through. And for him, that must have been, now I will say he drove it as far as me, but when I was looking at the irons he was holding for shots, it feels like he was probably a club and a half shorter than me with irons. And so he'd left himself about 40 metres behind me. I reckon he must have hit maybe 6 iron there, Warwick. Do you recall what he hit?
I'm thinking it may have been 7, 6 or 7. Because the play there was sort of more, you know, we're trying to just get it front edge or pin high. It wasn't a short wedge or anything like that.
No. Well, and people who know that green will know front pin, you miss left and it either goes in the bunker or it runs down the hill into the 10th hole. You miss it right, there's a little grass bunker that's actually just a really finicky little thing to hit it out of, because particularly to a front pin, if you hit it too strong, you just go down the hill one shot later than if you miss left with your approach. So again, that was a great shot. It was a good leave on the front edge. Matty, I rose to the competitive occasion by hitting a gap wedge, probably about 4 inches fat, I reckon. It was too short for a gap wedge, but I don't like hitting sandwich full, even out if I was on a bit of light cooch rough. So I decided to split the difference and just hit it horrifically fat. But then from about 35, 40 metres, managed to pitch it to 15 feet. And making that putt, Warwick, felt like a really big, you talk about those momentum shifts, making the 15-footer for my 4 felt like it may have been the difference, you know, given how much better I felt going into the back 9 having made that putt.
Yeah, a couple of times, you know, and I keep saying to Evan, always expect your opponent to hole everything or to pull that shot off. So when you hold that, he just looked at me and we just both smiled and just went, yeah, that's what we spoke about. Because, you know, 30 seconds before, Evan, you would say in that match play situation, similar to you on the 8th green, is you think you're in the box seat, 2-putt from 15 feet, or, you know, back to, you know, win the hole. And then, you know, yours was a great putt. It was in all the way. And he just turned around and just went, you know, so it wasn't a shock to his system. And I think that's where, you know, if he's inexperienced or not sort of talking about it, that would have probably rattled him a little bit more. But it, you know, gave you a nice little, momentum shift or confidence builder, sorry. But But yeah, like for Evan, it wasn't a shock because, as I said, you'd be trying to make that putt as well. So, you know, you've got to sort of look at it from the other angle as well. It's not a fluke if you do it, but if someone else does it, everyone sort of says how lucky they are, or what a fluke, or what a lucky shot.
Yeah. And I actually think there's like a physical benefit to expecting them to pull off the shot or make the putt, because you don't get that adrenaline spike. You don't get that heart rate spike. And I feel like, particularly when you're putting, slow heart rate, good even breathing, you know, those things seem to make a difference. And I think it's probably the unseen kicker to someone holds a bomb putt, and then not only are you trying to square them, but your mind's racing, your heart's beating, your breathing's kind of funny. So I think there's probably a physical benefit as well as a psychological one, to just thinking, of course he made it. Like, he'll make this. I have to make my birdie putt. I'll focus on making my birdie putt. And I guess it's that thing of focusing your attention on a positive intention versus just kind of waiting to see what happens. But yeah, that felt, going to the back, look, having been three up through four, three up again through six, going to the back only one up would have hurt me. So I felt really relieved and pleased that putt managed to get in.
Just a quick interruption here to make a little bit of a mention of what Burnley Brewing are doing at their tap house in Bridge Road, Richmond. They've got a Sunday social every single week where they are serving 1.8 litre jugs for $25. The kitchen is fantastic. The atmosphere is great. Their selection of beers is first class. Stacks of TVs, not too far from the MCG and from the Royal Burnley Golf Course, as well as the shopping precinct in Bridge Road, Richmond. Don't really need much of an excuse to head down there to Burnley Brewing to get your hands on one of these jugs that you can split with a couple of mates on a Sunday afternoon. Burnley Brewing, we thank them for the support of the podcast. Let's get back to Scott and Warwick.
So we're still two. We go to the 10th tee. I mentioned my old man was caddying for me. He had to go to the loo, so he ducked into the toilet that's part of our halfway house while we went and hit our drives. And he came out of the bathroom. The bathroom's kind of probably 80 metres forward of the back tee. And he said he walked out and he just saw a golf ball trickling along very slowly. And he thought, oh, dear. He said somehow in his bones he knew that Evan hadn't hit that shot. So Evan, of course, had smoked driver. And I was about 30 metres in front of the ladies' tee hitting my second. And it's funny because I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to try and make four. But there are holes where you probably, in hindsight, could just pick them up and walk to the next tee. And I think that was a pick them up. What did help me, I think, Warwick, in terms of staying positive and staying good energy, was that he proceeded to hit an iron, a really great iron shot, fed it off that left-hand slope. It's the only way to access the front right pin that we had. Fed it off the slope and then rolled in about a 12-footer for birdie. And so I kind of looked at Dad and said, well, yeah, even if I hit perfect drive wedge to 20 feet, two putt, I lose the hole. So I kind of just convinced myself that there was really no consequence for topping a drive, although it probably spoke to where I was mentally at that point. I was sort of starting to race a little bit because it was closer than I wanted it to be. But, yeah, I guess it's those mental games that you play with yourself sometimes, even just to convince yourself everything's fine, it's okay.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that you know, especially match play, you can have a bad hole, whether it be, you know, even if you proceeded to make a, you know, a big score and the other guy makes a birdie or par, you just, you know, you can't expect 4 hours plus of perfection. So, yeah, you know, what a good time to not have your best hole when they've had a good one and you can dodge a bullet. Where stroke play, you might rack up more by trying to chase the score. So, yeah, it's a... That's the great thing about match play. You just lose that hole one down.
I've always been it's always been a bit of a theme of my rounds at New South Wales that I'll have, you know, 10 over with two doubles and a triple. And I've always sort of said, oh, yeah, it's in Stableford, obviously that kills you because I'm driving home and I'm kind of punching the steering wheel a little bit and I'm like, oh, that was so close to a good round. Like, it was so close. You just got to clean up the shit, you know? And I think in match play, it actually makes me more effective because I, you know, this round is a good example. give away the inning because I think the inning's given away anyway. But so I, based on the scores that were probably reasonable or likely for us on each hole, I had 10 over on Sunday. Evan had 9 over. But I had 2 doubles and a triple. So I got a lot of that out of the way in 3 holes that I lost. So ultimately I had 12 pars and 3 bogeys. He had 9 pars, 1 birdie and 6 bogeys. And so I think it is that, as you say, with match play, and it's good because I'm prone to this, you can blow up for one hole and you can just leave it all behind. You haven't destroyed your card. You haven't, you've lost one hole. And you can lose one hole making birdie to their eagle. So it was definitely, I think that's why match play quite suits me, because I've always had, there'll be 3 times in the round that I'll just have a brain fart and it's ugly, but match play lets me just get on with my life. So yeah, people would say, well, you know, he's beaten me stroke, but I've beaten him in the match. And I guess that's why match play is match play.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, there are a lot of good match players out there who, you know, I guess you would look at, if you look at Ryder Cup history, you know, someone like Poulter probably comes to mind, probably hasn't won a lot of tournaments, but he was a great match player. And yeah, I guess there's probably a lot of guys who are down that alley as well, as, you know, they're memorable for winning matches against all odds, but then not having a great stroke play career.
Yeah. I wonder if I'd love to look into that volatility of someone like, you know, a Poulter or a Sergio, and see, you know, if you looked at birdie percentage, do they have, I guess Spieth's a good example of this. Spieth has a huge birdie percentage, even when he's not contending in a lot of tournaments, so he might be missing some cuts or he might be finishing T20 a lot. He seems to make, as a big Spieth fan who checks a lot of scorecards, there seems to often be a lot of 7 or 8 birdie rounds of 70. Although his individual record in Ryder and Presidents Cup's also crap, so maybe that's not the best example. But yeah, no, definitely the volatility is can be a benefit. It was for me in this round, but I've just lost 10. I've gone back to 1 up. So 11, little drop shot par 3, back pin. It's just all about not missing it long. So I think we both probably thought about that well and hit good iron shots. Mine probably had the benefit of just, there's a bit of a ridge that runs through the middle of that green, and putting up and over it can be quite tricky. Evan hitting first, having just made birdie, left his probably 40 feet short of the hole with that ridge to contend with. I managed to get mine up on the back deck and had about 20, 25 feet. It's just one of those slow breakers that breaks the same amount the whole way to the hole. And of course, Warrickie would 3-putt that one and give me sort of a bit of a pillow fight of a win on that hole. But as you say, that was the theme throughout, was, I guess, from outside maybe 25, 30 feet, it was just his speed and that's what cost him there, I think.
Yeah, that's the main thing. And I guess that's where the, you know, trying to be more in tune with the speed of the greens of the day. But yeah, I mean, if you plonked another 10 balls there, I'm sure, yeah, anybody would probably 3-putt them more than they probably would 2-putt from that situation. But yeah, it's yours was a really good 2-putt, and it was a well deserved hole there for you.
So we're back to 2 up.
At this stage, Scott, I was going to say you're four over par through 11, and you're 2 up in your match, and you've got a reachable par 5 to come. With the wind still at your back?
The wind had sort of, I mean, there wasn't really, the wind by this point had kind of swung around to the north. It sort of started west-northwest and gentle. Correct me if my recollection's wrong, Warrick, but I feel like by the time we got to 11, you know, 10, I remember the drive on 10, probably the top came from really trying to jump on it into the wind. So I think it was probably still kind of westish at that point. Yeah, but I reckon by the time we got to
11th tee was that's where I sort of noticed the wind had sort of swung a little bit northeast, a little bit off the ocean as well. So that, I thought that tee shot on 11 and 12 was into a little bit and off the left.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah. Warrick, with Scott winning 11 and then Evan going 2 down through 11, what are you saying to him at that point in the round? How are you sort of guiding him and sort of nurturing an inexperienced golfer, essentially?
I just noticed that, you know, the theme of a lot of people is when they lose a hole and they know they're, in the back nine, they feel as though they've got to win the next hole. They have to birdie the next hole, or but then especially around New South Wales, you can win holes with quite high scores, or not perfect golf, but I just sort of kept reminding him, look, don't worry, just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll see what happens. It's it wasn't as though he was playing poor golf. They were both playing great golf. It was good to be able to just be part of the close up watching them play. But with Evan, you could see he mentioned something about, I need to make more birdies, and I just said, just keep making, keep swinging it well, keep hitting good shots, and birdies don't always win the hole. It can be a par or it could be a bogey, and just more keep him settled, not thinking he's got to press too hard at this point.
I think that's one of the things, Warwick, that I've learnt recently, and it's probably transformed my golf quite a bit. I read one of these stats that was a Lou Stagner or a Mark Brody or whoever it was, and it was looking at the birdie difference between a five and a scratch per round and the double bogey difference. And it was just like, you don't get from five to scratch by making a historic amount of birdies. You get there by eliminating, as I need to, the triples and the doubles. And so that really, and it was also a comment that Solly made on a No Laying Up podcast about when he goes to tournaments and follows the guys who are in contention, the golf is actually quite good. Golf is quite boring. And it got me out of this mindset of exactly what you described with Evan of, I've got to make birdies, I've got to make birdies. I'm just like, I just want to make as many pars as I can. And when I make an error, I want it to become a bogey and not a double or a triple. And so what do I play? 15, 30, 48 holes in three matches in these championships. And apart from when I blacked out at the start of the semi and made three birdies on one, two, and three, I made one birdie the other 45 holes. It was just like, make par, just make par. I didn't even want to think about making birdies because that's where I knew I'd start to make doubles. So it definitely is, as you say, it's like, yeah, birdies are nice. And in stroke play, and probably where Evan's going with his golf, making a lot of birdies becomes crucial. But I feel like in this environment, at this level of golf, in a match play situation, if you just make the most pars, you're probably going to win 95 out of 100 matches.
Yeah, I totally agree there.
I reckon the scorecard confirms that too, because you're even par through four, Scott, and you've got a lead of three. You're three up through four. You've just put pressure on just by going fairway green, fairway green.
So. Yeah, and we've all played those guys in match play that's just like, they bore you to death. Now, my golf wasn't boring because there's too many crap shots as we're about to come across another one. But yeah, that was my goal, was just try to percentages all the way. So percentages being percentages, I wasn't going to try and drive it over the ridge on 12. In fact, my dad said to me, he said, you should hit driver. You're hitting your driver really well. Like apart from 10, which we can forget that, it was a bad swing. He said, I like you hitting driver here. I knew you don't have to do very much wrong at all on that drive on 12. There's the Badlands left where the fairway, kind of the left 10 feet of the fairway seems to kick you into it. You miss right behind 16 tee, you never find it. So and it was one of these situations where it made me realize I was thinking quite clearly and it reassured me. So I didn't pull driver, I pulled forward. And then, of course, there's a bit of crap on the left there and I hit a draw, a bit of crap on the left short of the ridge. And I'm standing there with forward and I thought, that's silly because you've taken away the potential benefit of hitting driver, but you can still hit it somewhere where you're chipping out sideways. So I ended up swapping that for a 7-wood and just hit it really short of the hill into the fairway. It's one where you often read coaches saying, if you're gonna play safe to take drama out of play, like make sure you do it properly. And that was one, Warwick, where I could easily have, the inverted commas safe play and had to regret it. But so two shots down there. Look, his went fairly way left on his second shot. But through one of the criticisms people make of New South Wales is that on that 12th and 8th holes, you can kind of miss either your drive on 8 or your second shot on 12 pretty much anywhere in that field, and it's fine. Notwithstanding that, he had a pretty tough angle into the green, back left, back right pin or back left pin? Kind of back middle, wasn't it?
Back, so it was on the right-hand side, but yes.
Yeah.
Two-thirds.
But he had a glorious shot in there, into the wind, controlled his flight. It was really, you know, as much as I hated watching it happen, it was really delightful to see, like a great shot. And again, it's one of those things where, Warwick, if you were standing over where I was, you probably observed what you observed on the fifth tee, which was me grab a 9-iron and just, you know, I'd kind of been pre-shot routine while he was hitting because I had so much time. But then when it was my shot, I felt like I'd sort of prepared and I just walked into the ball and Matty proceeded to, as seems to be, I mean, it happened to me, I described it happening on one, happened here again. I have a habit in when I'm tense of the leading edge hitting just about the equator of the golf ball. Went long. I was able to chop it out, but I think from when we found that ball in the bush, Warwick, that was a lost hole for me. And again, it probably, I hadn't really thought about this, but it probably goes exactly to what you're saying of nothing that happens before it's your turn to hit is preparation. It's kind of just time wasting, right? And it's once it's your turn to hit, you've got to do everything from that point. And I didn't do that.
Yeah, I think also, you know, probably a factor in that the wind was starting to pick up a little bit in that situation, and you know, everyone wants to try and squeeze the ball out a little lower into the breeze and, you know, just get slightly ahead of it. And that's the outcome of the that third shot went over the back.
Yeah. So, yeah, we lose that hole and we're back to one again. So one up, we're going into that stretch, you know, the last six, there's the four tough par fours coming, the wind is starting to blow. Evan's sort of starting to, apart from that three-putt on 11, you know, he's gone par, 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 birdie, three-putt bogey, par. So he's hitting fairways, he's hitting greens, he's playing the kind of golf that I've kind of just described that can really annoy your opponent and can be difficult to beat. So he hits a really beautiful little four-wood or three-wood or whatever he's carrying in his bag, middle of the fairway. My old man caddying for me after I hit my drive congratulated me on my bravery with my line because I took it right down the inside of the dog leg. I will admit I was aiming about 30 yards right of that and just trapped it. It's something I do. Like, it's something I set up for because I know that I'll often hit really good, like a good shot as in compress the ball off the face, a good swing, but I do hit little pulls occasionally. And so under pressure, I will, a shot like that where you can miss it, you can hit it in the middle of the fairway and you're fine. I knew that if I pulled it a bit, that would be okay. Whereas if I set up for the brave drive and I pull it a bit, then it's gone forever. So, you know, I guess knowing your weaknesses helps, but I must admit, I pulled the absolute ears off that. But it did mean I missed out on the kick forward. So Evan was probably 30 or 40 ahead of me. And again, I had the rough, you know, Cooch rough isn't my favorite thing as an architecture nuffy. But what it does do, Warwick, is that it forces those decisions and those tricks when you're in it, like you guys were on five. I had 8-iron absolutely, like, if I'm off the fairway, that's an 8-iron into that green. Pin was back left. Obviously, for those who know New South Wales a bit, this is the famous green that kind of has the far headland right behind it. You see the ocean, skyline green. You don't want to be long. Even finding a golf ball long is pretty tough. And even when you find them, you often wish you didn't. So I knew I couldn't miss long. The wind, as we say, is behind at this point. I'm in that bit of Cooch rough and I'm worried about flying one over. So I took 9-iron instead. But then also one of those features of Cooch rough is that when it's those fluffy ones that sit up that scream flyer, you can often put a short iron underneath them. And that one just, I looked at the, after I hit it, I looked at the impact mark on the face and it was sort of the above the middle of the face. So, of course, it comes down front edge and rolls 20 yards back down the hill. But it was one of those ones where it was, maybe as you described, Warwick, it was like, I feel like I considered all the things I had to consider and I probably pulled the right club out of the bag. Maybe if I'm a better player, I can control the strike point a bit better than I did. But sometimes, particularly on that golf course, you've just got to play the odds and maybe that spin of the wheel will go against you. But what else can you do?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that from, you know, observing it, I think that was the correct shot. And, yeah, you could sort of see that lie had that opportunity to jump and you go out and hit that a few more times, and you will get a few of them to jump on you. So yeah, I think that was always going to be the smart play. Is, well, there was no concern with just on the front edge, and if it rolls back the front, well, you still got an opportunity to make three or four, where if you go over, you're making five or six or more.
So Evan, of course, hits, a wedge maybe, really nice shot, 20 feet right of the back pin. That's a tricky putt because it's sort of downhill and it breaks quite a lot. So there's, and the way he's been putting, I'm like, well, he's probably going to make four, but give yourself a chance. Matty, it wasn't quite, I don't want to talk it up, like it wasn't quite the Ogilvy at Wingsfoot chip. But it, obviously I've got the green above my head. I can't really see much surface. But by that point, I kind of felt like I've just lost a hole to go back to one. He's playing better golf than me at this point. If I lose this hole, I worry that I don't have the energy to wrestle it back. And it was probably one of the best little 30-yard, 40-yard pitches I've hit. I figured, Warwick, that it was just his unfamiliarity with match play that didn't get me that putt given. But, I couldn't have hit it better than I did. And it was one of those things where I was like, again, it felt like I earned myself some confidence by hitting that shot. Just one of those moments where I kind of felt like, okay, he missed his birdie putt. He made maybe a 3 or 4 footer for his par. But that definitely felt like a win. The way that a half can sometimes feel like a loss or a win, that felt like a win for me, Warwick.
Yeah, no, that was a great sort of pitch shot into the, that with the green well above your head, and yeah, that was, it was a good four, good half there for everyone.
How close did you hit it?
18 inches.
Okay.
But nice. 18 inches under the hole, straight uphill. So I was pretty happy with that. But I mean, beautiful. I don't mention the concession with any kind of, some people do. I actually think with match play, I think the whole giving of putts is well overrated. I think you give putts if it's going to save time and it's, basically overhanging the hole. I've always found it weird that people want to be given putts that may not be 100% likelihood of making, because it's like, well, if you can be annoyed about not being given the putt, then you should be happy just to walk up and tap it in. Like, the whole concession thing does seem very, very strange to me sometimes when people think that there's some sort of, you should be giving someone a 3-footer at some point. If I think you might miss the putt, you're putting it.
Yeah.
You're right there, Scott. If there's any doubt, if you think that you could possibly miss that putt, I would always tell my players, we'll send them in, make them putt it. If there's 1% of doubt that you think that your opponent could miss it, or you think you would possibly miss it, always send them in.
Yeah. So 14, pretty uneventful. So I'll speed through it. Couple of drivers into the fairway, two really nice iron shots to maybe 15, 20 feet. Again, Evan's speed on that first putt, you've got to be very, and maybe it's that 20 rounds at New South Wales, Warwick. There's probably a handful of greens out there that are quicker slopes than they look like. They don't jump out to the eye like Seven does, but that's a putt that really you need to putt defensively, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And maybe he was sort of in that mindset of make a bird, and because from memory he was inside me and I'd already putted, make a bird and really, drive it home. But yeah, that was a three putt to get me back to two. So two up with four to play. I'm starting to think, all right, I can manage this one home. Probably not the best. Even just as I say that out loud now, maybe not the best thing for me to be thinking, walking up to the drive on 15, which, we've talked about a lot on this podcast, 37 metres from dead ball left to dead ball right. You got to hit it about 230, slightly uphill to get it through the saddle. The wind, as we've talked about, is from the northeast, so it's into you from the right. As a draw hitter, that's not something I relish. A draw hitter who carries it 230, like I need it behind me if I'm going to hit it through that saddle. And I had quite a period of time when I was getting my handicap down where I would just always hit four iron wedge onto that, make four or five. It never seemed to go wrong for me. I think though maybe, so I don't carry a four iron anymore, and this is where I think I got into a problem here, and I'm curious on your view of this, Warwick. So I don't carry a four iron, now I carry a four hybrid. And that obviously goes pretty high. So for me, it was like, all right, I'm going to hit five iron. And I'd like to be hitting a club longer than that, maybe, even though I'm laying it up and it's about safety. It was a bit of a tear, but I was like, no, I'm committed. I'm going to hit 5-iron. Notwithstanding what happened with 5-iron on the fifth hole, I did switch back to 5-iron on the first as well and striped it. So there's, I'm not carrying baggage about the 5-iron at this point. the 5-iron is still in the bag, though, I can confirm, hasn't been snapped. But I, again, maybe it was that I was so certain about being decisive about hitting that 5-iron. I feel like I sort of just marched onto the tee, teed it up, stood over it and swung. Impact might have been outside the grooves, Matty, on the toe end. And it was straight, so I got the straight bit right. But because I hit it so badly, it was in a bush right at the very end there where the cart path feeds into the fairway. And, of course, Evan, who's preparing to be a much better golfer, was able to hit a really nice drive up into the saddle. Warwick, I guess just generally, thoughts?
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw a 5-iron. I thought, well, you've pretty much taken, you know, I thought it's going to be a, you're not going to get there for two. You know, I thought you're bringing five in. Yeah, you didn't execute the shot, but yeah, your routine was quicker again, and you tried to, it looked like you tried to get that one under the breeze. And yeah, there was a couple of those sort of shots out there today that I saw, sorry. And yeah, you just sort of gave him the opportunity on that hole. Yeah, Evan hit a good shot to, which is always important after your opponent's possibly, like we couldn't tell whether yours was safe, but yeah, it was a 50-50. And then yeah, he executed his one well. But yeah, so I think you're just, as you're saying, you just had that club in your mind, you walked up, hit it, and you know, didn't do it as well as you would have liked.
Yeah. So no surprise he wins that hole, hits a really, yeah, hits a pretty nice iron shot left, pitches it to about 12 feet. You know, I've been fiddling around in bushes and trying to hit it out of bushes and taking unplayables and basically everything you can do to lose a hole, Matty, I did on that hole, and I can confirm that I managed to lose it. So we're back to one. We're playing 16, and again, I'll get through 16 pretty quickly because it was quite uneventful. Although probably some of the best golf we both played the whole day, Warwick, in terms of executed holes, like two absolutely pounded drives, two, you know, back left pin there, Matty, on 16. Obviously, you miss it long or left, you're dead. You miss short in line with the pin, you're in those bunkers that are really tough to get out up and down from. So two drives into the fairway, two short irons to the safe side of the middle of the green, lagged them up, made fours, moved on. Where one still the difference with Evan having the honour. 17, Warwick, I kind of hinted at it earlier when we were talking about his iron game. So 17 was playing 150 flag, was like a front right flag. We had 150 flag into the wind. Of course, you miss it at all right and you bounce down towards 16 fairway and you're literally 30 feet lower than the green, for those who think that's an exaggeration. He hit. Now, that's an iron shot that into that wind, under that pressure, to that pin, you know, he hits what must have been maybe 5-iron to about 10 feet. That was a shot that I'm just like, I can't hope to hit that shot with a bucket of balls. Maybe with a bucket of balls. I'm exaggerating. But you know what I mean? Like, for him to do that in that pressure, in that moment, in that wind, like, that was massive stones.
It was 5-iron. Yeah. I'm saying you sort of talk through a shot with somebody, like, he executed that exactly, you know, the way he sort of talked and called how he wanted to hit the shot. So that was pretty good. The thing that sort of blew my mind, there was someone standing over the back of the green and we're looking to them for a reaction and they didn't move. And so we all thought it must be short of the green or, you know, off the green, and walk up and find it about 10, 12 feet away. I had a chat to the guy and I said, oh, you didn't acknowledge a shot there. And he goes, oh, sorry. I said, well, I think that's one of the best shots I've seen on this hole over 30 years of being here. So, yeah. So he apologised for the remaining half hour about how he didn't put his hands up and say nice shot. So that was a nice little moment.
Wasn't it funny, Scott? Too? So it was throughout the round. It's something I noticed in this, like, the April light, when the sun gets a bit lower in the sky, the course gets glary, almost like I find it hard to see balls on green, on greens when you're facing towards the sun, so when you're facing north. And that was one where once we got a little bit closer, I was like, oh, wow, I can see it. I could not see his ball from the tee. So I can't say that it was intimidation that led me to hit kind of a heavy six iron short. But, yeah, it is – you know, we should have been able to see that ball because we could see the bottom of the flag stick and it wasn't too far from it. But, yeah, that was a hell of a shot. Yeah, my heavy six iron, pitched it long. The putt was never going in. That putt's, you know, that's a delicate putt. We're back to all square for the first time since we walked off the first tee. Though I felt oddly kind of, I don't know, just very calm. I don't know whether it's, I mean, I've had the benefit, I guess, of being through situations. I'm 41 years old. I've played a bunch of match play, all this kind of thing. I was really going to 18. I just kind of thought you've just got to play a good hole. And if you play a good hole and you lose the match, that's okay. We've just gone from 7 to 17. And Evan's played that stretch of, what's that, 11 holes? 8 plus 3. He's played those 11 holes in one over. So it was kind of like there was no – I've hit some bad shots, but I'm feeling like this kid's playing really great golf. And if he wins 18 or if we go extra holes and he wins, like he's earned this. Yeah, I've hit some bad shots, but I've also recovered. You know, I've made that par on 9 I shouldn't probably have made. I feel like I've represented myself. We're walking to 18. It's into from the right. Those who haven't been to New South Wales for a while won't know that the club decided maybe 2 years ago to turn the driving range from a free drop into out of bounds. And Maddie, I'm not a strong enough guy that I can bomb it over near 10 green into the wind. Downwind, I'm happy aiming right. And if you miss it, you carry the junk, not into the wind. And I know too that into a slight wind, my carry with driver is about 230 and the first bunker on the left is 220. So it's fair to say there's not a drive I'd relish into the wind. Evan hits first and he misses between the bunkers and the out of bounds. But there's like a little valley there, Warwick, and I feel like if you hit it on that line, I hit on that line a little bit, and you never really worry because if you're missing it towards the out of bounds, it'll kick right. And if you're missing it towards the bunker, it'll kick left. And he was always safe, I thought. Yeah. So I knew I sort of had to, again, I couldn't hit less than driver as much as I kind of desperately wanted to. It was a little bit squeaky bum, but I hit a pretty good drive. That said, the wind turned it over towards the bunkers. And Warwick, the whole 220 metres of that walk, I was convinced I was in that bunker.
All right.
I was certain of it. My house, I would have put my house on it. Like, I thought, you're in that bunker and you've done that and you're going to have to try like hell to make five here. But somehow, Maddie, it was kind of halfway up the bunker in distance, but it was on the left-hand side sitting on a nice little tee of Cooch Rough, which I've never been happier to see anyone or anything in my life than that golf ball on grass.
What a relief to get there and see that. Yeah.
So we're probably only about 10 feet from each other. We both hit our fairway woods. Mine's a four wood. I needed to hit that much club to get over. There's a bunker about 140 out on the right that can be a real risk to lay up into when you're being safe on that hole into the wind. Both hit really nice fairway woods. We had Cooch Rough under our ball, so there was no excuse not to. And what about your number, Warwick? My number, so I was right rough. Evan was in the fairway, which I think was definitely a benefit to that pin that was on the back tier, that tiny little back tier on the green they built for the 09 Aussie Open. I was in light rough. I had 95 into a bit of wind. You don't want to hit that long, but by the same token, you don't want 40 feet up a tier. I just... you know, if I have my time over, I'd probably try and take a bit off a pitching wedge and just kind of arm swing it and control the trajectory. But I wanted to hit something reasonably hard at that point. My touch wasn't feeling particularly reliable. So my gap wedge got sort of middle of the green. I think it probably landed edge of the green and kicked right down into the chipping area. Talk to me about what you guys were thinking there. So I've missed right. It's not dead, but it's clearly off the green. We're all square. You're in the fairway, back pin. What was the thinking around that shot, setting it up, what you wanted to be doing?
So I think you said you had 95. I think, yeah, we're five shorter. So yeah, I said to Evan, look, he's just missed the green, but he's still going to make five. It's not, But then it was sort of either a nice wedge for him. He knew he couldn't get his gap wedge there, and then the concern there is it getting up into that breeze and spinning, and then having a 40-50 foot putt to that back shelf, and that's always going to be a three putt from that position. So yeah, that he was comfortable hitting his smooth wedge, solid wedge, and he just turned it over a little bit, so it ended up in the top left fringe or just off the green on the left hand side, which left him a pretty treacherous speedy putt from that situation there. But yeah, he hit the shot how he wanted to. It just turned over a little bit, but yeah, I guess it was, in hindsight he looks at it and goes, oh, what if I hit the gap wedge? I said, well, then you're gonna have a 40-50 foot putt from there. So yes, that's one of those things that you can never know which is going to be the right choice.
And over a 90 meter shot, it's a matter of, if he's, I still thought his ball, when it stopped rolling, I still thought it was going to feed right and come back down onto that back tier. If his ball's a foot right, 2 feet right of where it was, it does feed down onto the green somewhere, whether it stays on the back tier or not, but it feeds onto the green. Yeah. As it was, Matty, he pulls up. That back tier's tiny and quite sloped, and there's a little bit of fairway fringe that's above it. So there's a bunch of that left area that's wet, that's scalloped out, and you're below the height of the green. So Evan's much closer than me, but he's up above the green. Warwick, I found out afterwards, after we finished, there was a little group of people around and behind that green. Once we both hit our approach shots, there was a straw poll taken of which ball would you rather have now. And you won't be surprised that there weren't any takers for Evan's ball, because that's a really, really delicate shot that he left himself. So I'm over on the right. I've got probably about 15 metres, 20 metres for the chip. Matty, it's very uneven. That the fringe, like the fairway area there, is quite shaped to get water away from the green, I guess. There's no flat place to land it. The first probably 15 feet of green is the slope of the tier. So, again, you're not wanting to land a chip on that slope. It was actually really good that there was no other option that I had. So, A, I'd run down Warwick and I had a bit of Kucherov under the ball, which was like on one when I missed that approach shot long left and I had to chip. I had a bit of grass under the ball, had it again. And fortunately, I had no other option. Putting it I wasn't never going to putt it. Chip and run wasn't going to work. And it was just like, I just thought immediately of that little pitch I hit on one. And I said to Dad, I was like, it's the shot from one. Like, it's fly it 85% of the way there onto the flat and then just let the speed of the ball and the slope of the green just run out. And if I put it inside 10 feet, I've got a putt for five. And again, I was, the things I think back to last Sunday that I'm really pleased with, my pitching and chipping, I've been going and working on it a bunch the last 2 months or so, just going to the chipping green and hitting those 20, 30 meter shots. And I was really pleased that I went back low and slow like I practiced, kept it wide, Warwick, instead of picking it up real sharp and handsy, and hit a really good shot to probably 4.5-5 feet past the hole. That was where, it's nice when you're under pressure, you do the stuff well that you tend not to do well. But of course that left Warwick and Evan up on the left. I've had four swings, so five's going to be good enough to at least go to the 19th hole. Warwick, I feel like that putt that Evan had to get it close, maybe even to keep it on that back tier, you've almost got to risk leaving it in the fringe.
Yeah, 100%. That's, we were discussing, you got to hit this so gentle, but... you sort of also say you can't leave it. You can't be too delicate. That's, it's pretty tough. You've got probably, I think you probably would have had 25, 30 feet to the flag, but he's got to hit it about 10 feet with no speed from there. But if he hits it 9 feet, it stays at 9 feet. And then he's, in all sorts from there. So when he hit the putt, I thought, it's a little bit firm, but I thought it was always going to give himself a little bit, end up a little bit closer than where it rolled down to. But yeah, you could do that shot a few more times and still not leave one in the fringe or get it past. It's hard for, you know, he hasn't had that experience, I guess, of hitting shots of, you know, I guess that's where the youth, they don't have that sort of experience or creativity or to be able to hit those shots or be able to, you know, they might hear it and someone tells them, but then, you know, deep down not knowing to trust it, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's that kind of old maxim of, you know, tell me and I'll hear, show me and I'll see, let me and I'll know. And with those sorts of delicate golf shots, you've got to have hit them and you've got to have had them under pressure so they meant something for you to understand. I don't know, that's, as you say, experience is a great advantage. And that shot, yeah, you hit it 11 feet, it goes where he hit it, which is down a tier to the middle of the green. You hit it 9 feet, it's still in the fringe and everyone's saying, oh, what a stuff up. You've really got to hit that shot. And as I say, if the wind's slightly different or if the bounce is slightly different, if his ball had come to rest a foot right of where it did, it probably rolls down there for his third and maybe he's got 4 feet for birdie. It's just those vagaries of golf, that those little things that happen that either reward you or hurt you. And that one definitely, that was a really unenviable place for him to end up. Down to the middle of the green, probably 30 or 40 feet up the tier. I thought he hit probably the best long putt he hit all day there.
Yeah, it was.
He hit it to about 8 inches. It was a really lovely putt given, yeah, maybe the certainty of the situation focused him. But really that putt for a lot of its journey was a chance of getting in the hole.
Yeah, you hit a great putt up the hill because, yeah, I think he sort of probably thought that he could see the match sort of right there in front of him. You know, run away from him, but yeah, he composed himself, hit a great putt up the hill, and yeah, and to make a six there.
Yeah. So I've got 4.5, maybe 4.5 feet, somewhere between 4 and 5. I'm left of the hole, so it's slightly downhill. I tried like hell to convince myself the putt was straight. I didn't want to have anything in that putt, but I just knew that tier. I mean, you saw what happened to Evan's ball when it was sort of on line with the hole, and it just went right. So I knew it had to have something to the right, and it was one of the it was something I learned. I've always struggled with those putts, Warwick, because like left edge, my traditional thinking of left edge, if you hit it left edge and it doesn't break, it's going to miss because it's almost like the middle of the ball's on the left edge. I've always struggled to mentally picture an inside right or inside left and kind of like, well, what does that mean? Like where... what is inside right or inside left? I've always struggled with that, and it's led to me, I think, missing putts like that because I'm on my through stroke about to hit the ball, and I'm thinking, is this the right line? A thing that I picked up a few years ago that's absolutely it made that putt for me was there was a no laying up video where Matty Kelly, who's Mark Leishman's caddy, was caddying for one of those guys, and one of the things that he said in that. He described a putt as being left edge of ball, left edge of hole. Now, that's a really good, clear, for me, like a very visual way of saying left center. And so I was thinking with that putt, I was like, left edge of ball, left edge of hole. If my speed's good, it still falls in the left edge. If it does break like I expect it to, it goes in. But I don't have any recollection of hitting that putt. I know I was shaky, but yeah. Hit a good putt. It went in with the speed I liked in the heart. And I don't know that I've ever felt a feeling quite like that ball falling in that hole.
It was a testy putt, but I mean the great thing was, yeah, you didn't leave yourself you know, it was a good pitch in there to give yourself that opportunity, but you know, the stroke under the, you know, the pressure and the situation was good. It was a great stroke, and you know, the ball went right in the middle. It was a great putt.
Yeah, it was a hell of a match, and I really, really enjoyed it. Like, there wasn't a lot of chat, pretty much no chat. I mean, Evan's a 14-year-old boy, and I think we all know 14-year-old boys. He was a 14-year-old boy in a match play final, so he was very focused on his mission. I was very focused on mine. I very nearly didn't have a caddy. It was only kind of Wednesday. I knew that you'd caddied for Evan in the semi, and I hadn't had a caddy in the semi, and I kind of was lying in bed on Wednesday night, and I was thinking, if it's a long day on your own, when now Sean, who I played in the semi, had a caddy, but they'd been very, very chatty and gregarious, and the three of us had a really nice chin wag the whole way around. And I kind of had this thing where I was like, this feels like too much for me to do on my own. I think I need, now my dad's not a golfer, but I said in my speech afterwards, my dad's not a golfer, but he's a plus five when it comes to managing my head noise. And there was certainly, I have no doubt that if I tried to do that last Sunday on my own without the caddy, Evan's got the trophy at his house right now. It was just that, even just another person who might not know golf, I mean, you know golf as well as anybody, but I think it was one of those things where people sometimes downplay the importance of a caddy. But for me, in those tense situations, just having somebody to verbalize your thinking to, if nothing else, has some benefit.
Yeah, I think, saying that sometimes the best caddies aren't great players or whatever. They're just that, you know, that sort of the one to sort of keep them focused or keep them level-headed. And, yeah, I mean, that's like I was only there with Evan just to make sure he didn't sort of, you know, make some you know, inexperienced decisions or choices. I just, you know, if someone else asked me to caddy for him in those sort of matches, I would have done it if I was free and available. But, you know, he handled himself well. I didn't sort of have to do too much, to be honest. It was just more I try and let the player, you know, make their decisions as well. But yeah, I mean, as you're saying, you could have a, you know, someone like your father doesn't play a lot of golf, but he knows how to manage, you know, keep your emotions or feelings under control. And that's the perfect caddy.
Yeah. It's a dad's job. Mate, you've got a lesson to get to. You've been so generous with your time. And I really love doing this. It's been great to go back through it. I've learned a ton just from listening to the stuff you've said. This is going to become my go-to reference point for playing good golf and not making stupid decisions. And I'm going to go and do some work on my pre-shot routine.
Yeah, mate, anytime if you need any help with that. It's been great to go through it with you guys.
And for people listening, I've had some lessons from Warwick. Warwick's tuned me up a bit at New South Wales. He's available for lessons. It's not just a member booking thing. Warwick is available. Ring the club, look at the club website. I can firsthand vouch for Warwick's coaching. And I think the next thing might be a short game tune-up that I need, because I see Warwick spending a lot of time around the practice green, and I notice those people at the top of the comp results in the weeks afterwards.
Thanks, mate. Thank you for those kind words. I better get down there. I've got a lesson to attend to.